Thanks for joining me for Blunt Business here on CannabisRadio.com. Thank you all for joining us, and appreciate you rating and reviewing the program if you haven't done so on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and also subscribe to the show where you find podcasts, specifically CannabisRadio.com, the Cannabis Radio app, YouTube, YouTube Music, iHeartRadio, all major podcast platforms, Amazon Music. We hope you stick with us through the duration. So we've had several guests on recently talking about the areas of hemp law. So you might remember we had Tucker Herndon and Ed Brown from Burr and Foreman that spoke specifically in Georgia. We're going back to Georgia once again with our guests for this program. We also had talked with Kari Griffin, attorney from Clark Hill, that gave us the lowdown when it came to Texas and Georgia. Now, I'm going to take a few moments just to go and give full context as to where we are right now, as there is this domino effect right now from state to state of the hemp laws looking to be changed. The same thing going in the federal level where proposals are being made. Overall, the idea would be that we might see a day where cannabis as just itself could be reclassified, which is what we're all looking for. We're waiting now since we've seen the DEA change to Terrence Cole, to the change of John Mulroney, the administrative law judge, being taken out for retirement to find someone else to go ahead and be seated to oversee the case of reclassification that came from the Biden administration through HHS through to DEA, where we are today. We're still waiting on that. But the other thing that's going on right now is in the hemp bill, and for hemp laws in general, states are looking to try to get rid of intoxicating hemp, which will make it virtually impossible for any hemp to be derived or manufactured into cannabis, because they want to make it where hemp is only for industrial purposes only. That's where, at least where I'm coming from with all this, but into what's going on current day in Georgia. Let's get into that right now. So recent legal developments regarding the Georgia Hemp Farming Act, State Bill 494, have been a focal point of litigation. Just to give a heads up, it's what will significantly tighten regulations on the hemp industry in Georgia. It's already gone into effect as of October 1st of last year. Strict new requirements for businesses, including mandatory licensing for growers, processors, manufacturers, and retailers, banning the sale of certain products, such as smokable hemp, flour, and various THC-infused foods, restricting sales to individuals 21 and older, and the new law also mandates labeling, packaging, testing standards for all hemp products sold in the state. We talked quite a bit about Georgia. We've just had a lot of people that have been able to go and reach our program to talk about this. Now, there's a particular lawsuit we're going to talk about here, Grassroots Association Incorporated versus the state of Georgia, that argues that this bill is unconstitutional because it is preempted by the 2018 Farm Bill. And the key point of contention is the state's new licensing and product testing requirements, where many business owners claim are overly burdensome, has significantly hurt their revenue, and also the law banning the sale of certain products. The other related development in this story also is the Georgia Department of Agriculture having a declaratory ruling clarifying that hemp pre-rolls or ground hemp flour are legal for retail sale as quote-unquote processed hemp products, end quote. The ruling potentially undermines the state's prior arguments that the scent of cannabis constitutes probable cause for a search, as a legal alternative now exists. This lawsuit and the broader legal landscape highlights the tension we've been talking about here on this program, and here to talk about it, I have the principal attorney of Watson Law, Zakiya Watson-Kaff, and I'm here also with Rocheros Fortune, who is the founder and CEO of Good Fortune Group, both attorneys based in Georgia. Zakiya, Rocheros, thank you for being on with me. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
My pleasure. So now, Zakiya, off your, just to go in with you, first of all, you have been a prominent advocate for civil rights, leading the challenge in the state of Georgia on behalf of the Grassroots Association. So you're representing this client, and your work has been a lot in the intersection of law, business, and social justice. So you're here to help us out with all the legal and economic ramifications of Georgia's hemp law based on this lawsuit. So I'll go to you first. The legal concept of federal preemption in the context of the 2018 Farm Bill. So we already know that the Farm Bill itself, you know, the FDA never really gave proper direction, any proper framework to it. So it's always been very much cloudy and mired at best. But help me on how you're able to go and apply the minutia of this to the licensing testing requirements that are already required in this new state bill that's been put out. How did you put that argument in front?
So we made several arguments in our complaint. And I just want to clarify a couple of things. Grassroots is one of the five plaintiffs that we represent. And we wanted to show in our complaint that there were multiple industries that were affected by it. We have a retailer, we have, you know, a hemp farmer, we have just multiple industries, manufacturer. And as far as how we approached it, we approached it as a taking under the taking clause, meaning, you know, that there's no due process. My clients have lost at the low end about 40%, at the high end closer to 80% of their revenue as a result of the laws that have been passed. The big one that you see commonly, not only with my case, but several other cases throughout the country is the preemption clause. And so the federal preemption clause, you can't have state laws that preempt or that are attempt to override what's allowed by the federal government. And so that's our main argument. Those are our main two arguments. We have a couple of small ones, but those are the two big ones that we're moving forward with in this lawsuit.
Now, Russ, I want to bring you into the conversation. Tell me about your involvement into the case here. And I want to ask you both also about the fact of the impact of your clients, these five clients you have now under this lawsuit, that it has led to over 50% losses of revenue. So is there anything you can tell me about what the state regulations have done to cause that loss in revenue?
Right. So I can, I want to just chime in. Something you mentioned earlier, I want to just let the viewers know with the Senate bill 494. Also, when you talk about establishing a new hemp business, there's going to be a lot of red tape and restrictions there. Like zoning requirements, you can't be within a certain limit, 500 feet exact within a school, K-12, post-secondary education. Also, advertising restrictions. If you talk about kids, you can't make things that are like too colorful or too bright. That's going to be an attraction to the youth. So those are two things that are also included in the bill from 2024 that I wanted to talk about. And also, just to go back to your point, how did I get involved? So I do teach constitutional law, and I've studied it for a while. And so what Zakiya Watson-Cafe was referring to was that Fifth Amendment right. And so it's important that your viewers know that not only do individuals have constitutional rights, but entities as well. So you can see where the industrial industries are conflicted and how they can be treated as a body or a person, whereas they do have rights. And we're trying to just uphold those rights because there's a clear violation of the Fifth Amendment. I want to just mention really quickly that we know that the Tenth Amendment allows states to be sovereigns. However, like Ms. Watson-Cafe said, if there's a federal law standing already, that federal law is going to preempt and be stronger than anything that's on the state level. So we want to just come in and bring that constitutional argument. We believe that is the strongest argument because the Constitution is the first and initial and the most protected law of the land.
Now, also, I've noticed that with a lot of these issues with the hemp bill, it's a lot of contesting when it comes to states that are not adult use yet either. It's basically just medical only. So that's why there's importance of the hemp regulations and being what they are, so that there are at least the hemp derived cannabis will help in the marketplace of supplying that demand that's out there because of the restrictions that are placed for adult use. Now, in this, let's make this point clear too. So in the last 10 years, Georgia's been going through this and we've been around for all of it. So now, going back to HB1, Halley's Hope Act, which was the first time we had low THC oil up to 5%. The same thing was the Charlotte's Web. Their version was brought into the state in 2015. The Farm Bill then opened things up across the board, including for Georgia. And then the 2019 Hemp Farming Act, or SB 494. In 2019, that was in response where Georgia passed its own hemp law. But again, the framework was for hemp cultivation and processing within the state, but there was never a robust regulatory system in there. Again, just like the federal bill, it's a gray area. So some of the problems for law enforcement, they would be saying, are difficult to distinguish legal hemp between illegal marijuana based on smell or appearance alone. So the gray area has always been a part there, but legislation has never really tightened up or taken care of the problem. Instead, we leave the gray area, and now we're at the point where they're trying to take away. So Zakiya, what is it about in Georgia in particular, where we've had so many years of growth, there's no real policing or regulation as to what they're doing with hemp. This is across the board in other states like Texas or Missouri or Tennessee that have also started enacting the same similar laws. What is it about Georgia that, you know, could be done? You would think they would have gone a little bit farther into regulation compliance and trying to work on that.
Our position is obviously to get closer to the legalization of cannabis. I think that's pretty clear. Mm-hmm. As far as what can be done, number one, I think we can remove this, and that would be more on the federal level, because as far as what hemp is, Georgia did, for the most part, almost entirely adopt the definition in the 2018 Farm Bill in there in the SB 494. Our position is that it's arbitrary. It's, you know, it's based on 0.003. We made an arbitrary legal line. It's the same base plant that is, you know, provided. It's the same product, removing that, again, that would legalize, obviously, cannabis as well. I guess on the smaller level, with as far as advertising is concerned, not advertising it to kids, that's probably not something that's going to be overturned. We see it in other industries such as alcohol and things like that.
That's also the part about the packaging has been out there that has been targeting, that kids can be targeted by seeing that packaging looking like what it is. The other thing is, so as I mentioned, SB 494 originally was passed in 2019, and we were talking about the amended version of this here. So the way I look at it, and Rosa, please let me feel free to interject. The law, when it comes to adding strict licensing, testing, and labeling, I'm all for that. That sounds the right direction. But then they take the ban in the place of smokable hemp flower and many THC-infused foods and restricting. Now, the sales to 21 and older, I can understand that. But still, testing, licensing, labeling, compliance, all for it. But they give and they take away. Why is it there's that dynamic here that the takeaway part of that has to be involved in this amendment?
And I can chime in really quickly. If you're familiar with Georgia, Atlanta is one of those type of cities where it could be considered an entertainment district. You have a number of establishments where you can go buy these products, whether if that's going to be at one point, you know, the flower, the gummies, even now the drinks. You even see the drinks in regular retail liquor stores. So it's readily available. One issue, as I mentioned earlier, as a former prosecutor, that we were seeing was you would have a lot of people pulled over, and like you said, probable causes in marijuana, is it hemp? Also, driving under the influence, DUI drugs. And so I believe that the regulation does seem to stem from a public safety perspective. However, because marijuana could sometimes be hard to gauge, right? It affects everyone differently. I think that's when you really get that ambiguity and people really don't know how to regulate it. So it's like it's kind of testing and kind of fix it as we go. Like maybe this works, maybe it doesn't work. So I think that uncertainty really kind of leads to the back and forth with the legality of the laws.
But now the thing is, the potency of what you get in hemp is supposed to be still a certain standard. So I mean, I don't know how much, you know, clarity or any kind of, you know, impairment would be caused by the products. But the thing is that if you're telling me the state of Georgia, like other states, they can't just take that licensing, testing, and labeling and apply the smokable hemp and THC-infused foods? They can't just do that?
It seemed like that it would be, but I think the research and development, we're talking about the government here, right? So it just feels like maybe...
But they're also giving some guidance that I think is being misled.
I agree. I definitely agree with that, yes. Yes, and Zaki, I know you're saying something.
No, I was agreeing. I mean, there, as far as the testing requirements, as far as the packaging, it has been a huge issue, much larger than people realize. I don't know what they can do because on one end, it's almost like they're trying to make it so narrow that it essentially becomes illegal, or it's right on the border of hemp being illegal. And they're doing everything that in our opinion, and again, in our lawsuit, they're doing everything that they can to make it as narrow as possible, with to the point where they're making my clients' businesses practically illegal, despite the fact that they built their businesses on the understanding of the 2018 Farm Bill. And that's part of, again, that's a big issue with the revenue that they've lost. As far as the what they can do, again, it would be to be honest about what hemp really is. I think that that's a problem. Maybe having more scientists, people that have knowledge of the industry, help with legislation, do real research and not research from people that have a particular agenda in mind when they're doing the bill. So don't start with the end. Start with, okay, what does the research say? And then build the bill around what the research says, what should be required, what shouldn't be required. Have some more, I would argue that they should have more reasonable fees and access, have businesses have more access to, or individuals have more access to, I guess, federal funds or government funds so that they can operate their business. But there are a lot of things. I think but I do believe that part of it is starting with honesty and having people that understand what hemp is participate in the building of the bill or the writing of the bill.
We're going to come back with more questions here with Zakiya Watson Kaff, principal attorney and founder of Watson Law, and Ronchero's Fortune, founder and CEO of Good Fortune Group, here on Blunt Business, with more about, in particular areas, about the case itself and where it's being taken, and also the outreach being asked for to help in this case, to bring support so this case can get brought up as far as it can to make a difference. We'll be back here with Zakiya and Rocheros here on Blunt Business after this. Welcome back to Blunt Business. I'm here again with Zakiya Watson Kaff, founder, principal attorney at Watson LLC, and Rose Fortune, who is founder and CEO of Good Fortune Group, here on Blunt Business. We've been talking about the impact of the Georgia Hemp Farming Act and the impact is being done. And of course, we were talking about the lawsuit that Zakiya has put.
Life is unpredictable, but preparing for the unexpected shouldn't be. Take ownership of your life planning with Policy Genius to help your loved ones have a financial safety net in case something happens to you. They offer life insurance policies starting at just $276 a year for $1 million in coverage. Don't wait for life to make other plans. Protect your family today. Head to PolicyGenius.com. That's PolicyGenius.com.
Further up, on behalf of Grassroots Association and a total of five plaintiffs to go up against the state of Georgia about the unconstitutionality of this particular bill. Now, going back to the interviews I've done before here, the one thing I was thinking about as well is that at the same time, in the Southeast itself, like I said, when it comes to Tennessee, when it comes to other areas, they've had this issue about trying to go ahead and crack down on Delta 8, Delta 9 products. Mm-hmm. Understood. So it's a part of, I would be understood about removing products in each of these markets, but we also, at the same time, if there was just some kind of regulation that was put into play without trying to remove products. And then the other part is, if you're not going to go ahead and offer hemp-derived cannabis products, then let's open the door for more products in cannabis itself. But now, on the ground of the plaintiffs that you're working with right now, Zakiya, what can you tell me about when they've lost that 50% in revenue so far, or up to, what has been done in terms of the cultivation process? Have any of these outfits done anything to start converting the land that they have available to do other things, hemp-derived, as they try to find any other avenues to go ahead and make up that income?
So it depends on which plaintiff we're talking about. The retailers are not really sure what they're going to do, because that's been their let me rephrase that. The storefront, the ones that, you know, have actual stores in Georgia, those are the ones that are suffering the most, because they have large amounts of inventory and they don't know how to offload that because there are also regulations with how they can be transported across. They're not going to be able to sell it right now to other Georgia hemp-based businesses, obviously. They're looking to sell it elsewhere. And there are several laws with how that can go forward. I would argue that they may be suffering the most immediate. So they really haven't. They're just taking the loss right now and still trying to figure it out.
Those plaintiffs now are specifically just on the area of supplying inventory that is hemp-derived cannabis. They're not any vape shops, smoke shops, or any other types of stores that would be that has as an accompanying extra product to have on their top of their inventory.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
These plaintiffs that you represent, they're just basically just cultivating or retailing the product of hemp-derived cannabis products. They're not doing anything else because unlike there's other stores that might be smoke shops or vape shops or, you know, convenience stores that might be selling some products as part of their inventory, they're strictly in this inventory, correct?
Not exactly. It's just that the hemp-based portion of the business was a vast majority of it. So they're still able to sell, you know, pipes and things like that. But it's not that it wasn't bringing in, that portion of business wasn't bringing in, but if you have 80% coming from your hemp-based products and over 20% coming from, actual pipes and things like that, then you're losing such an enormous amount of your revenue. What the farmers, or the farmer that I have, but other farmers have called, they are either trying to sell property or they're reorganizing their company to not have so much of their company based in hemp. We have a manufacturer that is looking he's already left at this point to leave the state because he just couldn't do business here anymore and had to relocate again because there are a lot of rules around transporting hemp outside of Georgia or even receiving hemp from other states. And so the cost associated with that was too cumbersome for his business. We had another one who had purchased a lot of inventory, invested a lot of money in building with the intent to build a business based on the 2018 bill. And unfortunately, he has decided to close down again. He's trying to offload the equipment that he purchased and the inventory. And so we're seeing just, again, real challenges across the board in the industry. And it's affecting so many small business owners. And then obviously on the criminal side, Attorney Fortune has already kind of touched on that. Just it's affecting people's lives. Not only the driving, the DUIs, but also with my small businesses, with government officials coming in saying this portion of your inventory is not legal and confiscating it. Mm-hmm. And again, there's no reimbursement for any of this. Obviously, it's deemed illegal. It just adding a sudden loss over a bill that never had, as you've already stated multiple times, that really not clear. And there's really nowhere else for us to look. We look to other states to see how they're enforcing it. We look, obviously to past cases, you know, stare decisis and all that. But even if you look in Georgia laws right now, you don't see any real litigation under the new hemp bill in here in Georgia. So as attorneys, it's even hard for us to say, okay, well, this is how the courts are interpreting this. This is how this is what's the reasonable expectation of the judges. They have this issue before them. So with respect to my clients, that's how that's how it's playing out. They're losing revenue by officer law enforcement coming in and confiscating a portion of their revenue and trying to offload inventory that they can't, you know, do anything with. And for those, obviously, that can convert their business, I think the farmers may be in a little bit of a better situation, but it's still very difficult. They're just doing the best they can, but my retailers are just having a really big problem.
You know, when I look at the ongoing problems, Texas, Louisiana, Indiana, Kentucky, California, Florida, South Dakota, Kansas, Utah, and Alabama have all had this similar issue. And I'm surprised there's not some kind of a any kind of a tort or kind of class action just to go up against this, because it's the same thing going across the board. So smokable mm-hmm. products, THC-infused foods, they want to go and take those out, take away what might be the lifeblood of some of the inventory for some of these businesses, mm-hmm. and find a way to go and, you know, really, I think just the labeling, the packaging, and all the extra enforcement is just to go and charge more money. I still can't forget earlier this year when I did a previous episode about the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, how they charge an annual fee for the electronic application of their trademark and how much mm-hmm. it is for them every year because they're looked at as a fast-paced industry. So there's a constant thing going on here that it's just more money being taken out, and I just feel like it's just a bit of a scam going on. That's my word, not anybody else's. But I look at that, and when you've looked at other states, and Rosa, I'll ask you the same, do you see that's the common trend, that they are just basically just enforcement for more money coming in and also cracking down on the revenue just to punish those same businesses?
I agree 100%. So my home state is Alabama, and I noticed that same trend, how at one point, you know, the Hemp Farm Act was fine. You had smokables in the shops, you had edibles, and then I think maybe June or May this summer, Alabama stopped. And the same trend that happened October 1 of last year here in Georgia, where you can find flower. And to me, I didn't understand it, but I think you're absolutely correct. It's all about money. At the end of the day, it's about money.
And so with this, I mean, have you, Zakiya, looked at any other lawsuits in other states and how they've been able to do? Has there been anything that you pointed out that you say, well, the direction and the strategy they went with in this state to counteract against their, you know, increasingly more egregious hemp law, has there been anything you've seen out there that you've seen that might be a good standard to follow in the case that you're representing?
So the short answer is yes. I have looked at a lot of other states. It is hard because a lot of what we had initially sought to argue has been overturned, or has been, let me rephrase that, have been upheld in other states. We did see a recent win. I want to say, I feel like it might have been, I can't remember what state. I've looked at so many cases, I'm so sorry. But it was actually taken in federal court, mm-hmm. The case. And it wasn't, obviously, it would have been wonderful if it was here in the Fourth Circuit. That is exactly our strategy. I mean, it's not a secret. The state of Georgia, I know here, the AG filed, or not personally, but I know who the AG is. And I'm familiar with the arguments that have been made in the past for similar challenges to bills. And so, yes, that is what we've been doing. We've been looking at other states, Mr. Fortune and I, and just trying to determine. But there is, it's no secret that the law is turning the wrong way, in our opinion. The laws are often upheld. But there have been some wins, some small wins.
Let me ask you this real quick, because what you pointed out was very important. One of those cases you were looking up at was one that did get to federal court. But in the meantime, the case you're holding right now, you took it to Fulton County Superior Court and not to a federal court right away. Tell me about the approach to going to Superior Court versus the federal court.
I want to see if Georgia's willing to do it on their own. I mean, we have the support here, to be honest. I don't think that we need it to go to federal court. I believe it may make its way to federal courts, but we want to start here in the state. We have just from we're into politics here. You would have to be to have this kind of lawsuit. But, you know, I have my base. The reason why I brought Mr. Fortune on is because he has his much larger base of supporters. And as far as the public is concerned, the legislator is not doing what, in our opinion, again, what the public is looking for. And so we started here because we wanted to see if we can get the state to overturn or to at least the provisions that we believe are problematic. You mentioned that you're surprised it's not a class action or anything like that. I do believe that this was a case, not whether our case would be part of it or not, but I do believe with all of the inconsistencies among the states, as far as their bills, they may be upholding their own bills, but the bills are not consistent as far as how they're being applied. I believe this might be something that makes it to SCOTUS because that's obviously one of the things that they do. They create or at least attempt to create consistency when there's too much inconsistency among circuits. And so.
But now that's the one thing I want to make mention of. I want to go to commercial break, but when we come back, I want to take on that point, the fact of that this could be more of a class action feel to it. Because the fact is that you are looking for more plaintiffs. You're making the call out there for more plaintiffs to join in this case. And the precedent of making this case go up to the Supreme Court, if it could be possible, would finally make the FDA or whatever other governing bodies finally do something about this. Because I think that's the only way any real movement could go to it. Because the other commissioners of the FDA have just let this sit. They have not done anything to implement. They're going to get to this in 2026. And now they're already talking about, well, we're just going to do the same thing the states are going to do. So if a lawsuit can finally make it up there, then Supreme Court can also kind of just outlaw the fact that, okay, you can't make changes to the farm bill, but you're going to have to do some things to make it right. So let's come back and we'll focus on that. Also, just the grassroots nature of this case and the fact is, you know, your lawsuit can only take on so many plaintiffs and you need some extra capital to go ahead and fight these bigger forces out there. So we're going to talk about that in a few moments. Back with final question was Zakiya Watson-Calf, principal attorney and founder of Watson Law LLC. And website for that is zwatsonlaw.net. Excuse me, Z Watson, the letter Z, watsonlaw.net. Make sure you go to look at that on the website there. And also, I'm joined with Rose Fortune, who is the founder and CEO of Good Fortune Group. Back with both of them and final questions after this. So we've been talking about the issues surrounding the Georgia hemp farming law, the amended Georgia hemp farming law here on Blood Business. Here was Zakiya Watson-Calf, principal attorney, founder of Watson Law LLC, Rose Fortune, founder and CEO of Good Fortune Group. And one thing I want particularly to talk about here coming up now is the fact that trying to make this into a bigger case, possibly get this in front of the Supreme Court. It's a grassroots venture, by the way. This is not, you know, you're not some, we're not looking at, you know, some large firm with like millions upon millions of dollars and they're putting up billboards all over the place. It's not like that. But it's for a great cause. The fact that you have these companies coming together to try to build this out. And the thing is that you could use more help to go ahead and bring this forward. So you are calling out for more plaintiffs. As a kid, it's clear you're building this grassroots movement. So what could the business of public support out there, even with the cannabis industry or the hemp industry, can they do in the legal proceedings and help strengthen your case? What are some of the things they could do right now? I mean, if it's not yet on a supportive end financially, what could they be doing?
Well, we do work with other, outside of financial, we do work with other support groups. That's actually the lead plaintiff grassroots association is not, I mean, they bring together small hemp or cannabis-based businesses, hemp or mm-hmm. cannabis-based businesses. So just getting involved locally, making your voice heard, calling your state legislators, things like that. Just letting them know this is what we want, that, you know, taking the position that hemp and cannabis should be moving toward illegality is just not what the public wants. So just really getting out, finding your local, there are a lot of organizations. You can literally just Google cannabis businesses or nonprofits. So that's what can be done. We also work with, for those that have licenses and things like that, we've worked with doctors that have more like scientists than MDs, but just those that understand how it could be helpful, educating others, holding seminars, and it doesn't have to be anything formal. You can do a quick Zoom meeting or something like that. But there are they're just getting active in your community, because I do believe that the general public is in favor of legalizing cannabis. I think that, you know, I couldn't be wrong, but our numbers show otherwise. And I don't know, Mr. Fortune might have some other.
Yes. So quick segue. I agree 100%, but I want to just take you guys way back to 1919. So I'm really big on constitutional law, like I was saying earlier. And the 18th Amendment was one that was enacted that made alcohol illegal. If you guys can remember the transportation, the manufacturing, correct, correct. But soon later, 1933, 21st Amendment, it was appealed. And why? The people wanted alcohol. I think we can literally, if we can get organized, we can galvanize the people to have this same effect. So like you're saying, getting educational, like knowing the benefits, the medicinal uses of THC or hemp or any derivative thereof, being able to understand how, you know, if it's regulated properly, how this could be a great thing for everybody. And I do believe numbers show that the grand majority of Americans, they afford, you know. And so, and you think about states like Washington State, who actually legalized several different drugs. That Washington State has not fell off the map. So I don't think it is.
Psychedelics, when it comes to various other treatments, right? They have not seen any kind of a change in any kind of criminal issues that might have been. I don't remember, what was it? Senator in New York, Chuck Schumer, talking about the fact that he thought there would be some great issues in Colorado, given cannabis being legalized in the state. But 10 years later, he's like, oh, I'm wrong about it. I guess I was proven wrong. Now, in the case itself, you are representing, at the end of the day, smaller businesses, and it's not the MSOs. So like, there's also an issue where when you look at small local businesses going up against the state, the MSOs might have the manpower and the lawsuits and the lawyers to go ahead and, you know, crack down on this thing, but this is really ultimately hurting hemp businesses in general and potential entrepreneurs in Georgia, which is the other part that we know that, you know, in the area of hemp or cannabis, there's a lot of room for a lot of social advocacy being brought in place so that you can have a plethora of entrepreneurs be able to go and come in, build their own businesses from the space. But it's laws like this that really hinder that opportunity. Tell me about the part about, if it really is that this lawsuit, but by the size of the fact you're representing smaller local businesses here, but it's also that the bill is meant to do that.
So, I don't know, Ms. Porter, you want to answer that?
Or? So I think overall, like, so we all would agree that, you know, the United States, there's a large middle class. And these small businesses are the ones that, you know, make up class, the mom and pops, the nuclear diners, other things of that nature. So we believe that this hemp, these hemp stores are just an extension of that small business where the American population, the American dream was. You know, you've given us an opportunity to, people have sold marijuana, hemp, THC, I mean, moon rocks, and so many things have been sold illegally. And you gave us a chance to make an honest buck. And a lot of people really gravitated towards that. And I think by taking that away now, you talk about the entire supply chain is being affected. And then you talk about elasticity, like and inflation and tariff, like it's really harming the economy not to have that stream of revenue that was so beneficial for everyone. I think when hemp was legalized in Georgia, that was a mass production of it because everyone was gravitating and sales were through the roof. And so by not having that availability, you are really hurting the heart of the middle class. That's what I would argue.
And I think just 2 seconds on that. I think it also is something that people can empathize with, can sympathize with. I mean, it's a difference if you're representing, you know, McDonald's versus, you know, just the mom and pop shop, somebody that's in your neighborhood. You get to know these people. Mm-hmm. These aren't major corporations. This is what makes up, as Mr. Fortune said, the middle class, our neighbors. Yeah, and there are real implications. And I while I did speak about my clients and their real revenue loss, obviously it also affects everybody else. Those that make the labels, right? Our labels that don't have the QR code that they added in. those businesses are also losing revenue as well, where if my clients can't afford to move forward, they can't afford to have new labels made, they can't. So it has a rippling effect of other businesses that may not be hemp-based, but have revenue from hemp-based companies.
So let's direct people to the website right now so that people can go and find out and learn more about the case, but specifically to help with these plaintiffs that you're representing, because right now to go up against the state of Georgia and to continue to go and push this case forward as far as it can go, there's funding that is necessary. So we want to go and direct people to zwatsonlaw.net, the letter zwatsonlaw.net, all one word. And there you're going to be providing a place where people can go ahead and find out how they can go and support your cause. Please tell people what they can go and find when they go to the website and how they can help out.
So there are basically two financial ways you can help out. The first one is just a basic GoFundMe, and that will be used for our case. There are a lot. I mean, we're going against the state of Georgia. Both Attorney Fortune and I have been in front. We've gone against major parties on the other side. That's nothing new for us. But it is no secret that they have unlimited resources, especially when you're dealing with the government. They don't have to look at the bottom line. They will spend the money that is needed. And we need the same on this side. And our clients, they're losing revenue. And so it's very difficult for them to fund it. So we're asking for the cost of our clients to be to assist with that. And that would just be a GoFundMe link. Any donation, contrary to what you maybe believe, does help. It helps with, and just for clarification, this is not just money in the attorney's pockets. It helps with a lot of things. It helps with getting experts. It helps with filings. People don't realize how much it is to pull transcripts and things like that when it makes it to the next level. It helps with investigators. It helps with getting the type of people that we need on our side to support our efforts. And so whether it's $5 or whether it's in the thousands, we are extremely grateful for any donation that you can make to assist our clients in moving forward in this chase. The second are basically just people that have committed to, if they want to be part of the case. There is a large, I don't want to call it a donation, that's a misclassification, but a large amount that they take on, and it's $15,000. And again, that goes to helping to the cost of litigation. It helps, obviously, pay the attorneys, but also, again, with those third-party costs. We are looking for 10 plaintiffs that can spend that. And also, obviously, that want to become a part of the lawsuit. So you'll be actively involved in the lawsuit. Somebody that's been affected by this bill, obviously, and someone that wants their story to get out and wants the government to understand why this bill is very harmful for the small business owners, people of Georgia, generally. So those are two big ways that you can assist financially with our efforts.
So let's go and do this once again. Website is zwatsonlaw.net. Make sure to go to that website as we go and close things out. And that's how we know how we can go and stay in touch with you. And Rose, how can we stay in touch with you as well?
Thank you. I appreciate it so much. So my website is very simple. It's www.goodfortunegroup.com. goodfortunegroup.com. And quick plug, it is a play on words. The word good is actually spelled like good, and just homage to a great dear friend of mine, Barry Louis Gould, who lost his life back in 2022. And so, yes, just find us there. We're all over the web, all over social media as well. IG, Only One Roast, you can find me. The Good Fortune Group website is there as well. We're definitely out here throughout the state of Georgia, so you can actually Google me.
So again, joining here with Zakiya Watson-Kaff, principal attorney, founder at Watson Law LLC, Roland Cheros, Fortune, founder and CEO of Good Fortune Group. Thank you both for being on with me and sharing the story about Georgia. Really appreciate you taking time out and reaching out to me about the story. Glad to have you on.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
And thank you, listeners, as always, for listening in. For another Bump Business, we'll talk to you next time.